bit this morning about the amount of rain that happened in Regina and the southeast. And I noticed I got a text from George in the southwest saying it's tough hearing about all the rain talk, and yet not a lot of it has dumped in that part of the province. It is my hope, because if you look at the forecast over the next while, check the satellite radar, there's a lot of rain that is going to be moving through all of the province, but predominantly in the south part of the province. And gosh, I hope that southwest part gets some rain. Absolutely needed. We talked about it yesterday with our hydrologist guest that we had on the show as well. Hopefully this week that comes to fruition for our farming friends and those that are planting gardens as well, looking for some moisture as well. In fact, if you think about planting gardens springtime, it's a bit of a reset for many people. I jokingly said this morning, first of the year, you've got a lot of people that will say, okay, this is it. I've got to change things. I've got to eat better. And by this time of the year, those bad habits, those old habits, which are hard to shake, come back in, creep into your life. And this is another time of the year where we see a bit of a spike. People are like, okay, summer is coming. I want to be more active. I got to get outside, but I also have to look at my eating. That is such an important part of this. We've had Brooke Bullock on the show before. I love having Brooke on as a guest. Registered dietitian, a business owner, Food to Fit Nutrition. And I'll throw the website out a couple of times, but it's Food to Fit .ca. And Brooke Bullock joins us in studio today for a full hour, I might add. So, Brooke, settle in. We got lots to talk about.
So glad to be here. It's great to be in studio.
And we will, by the way, later in this hour, be opening up the phone lines and the text lines for you as well. So if you want to shoot a question in to Brooke talking about something to do with diet, maybe you've got a question, Brooke would be happy to take your call, 1-877-332-8255. Already a couple of texts have come in, which is good. So you've been doing this for quite a while.
Yeah, 16 years.
How did you get into this? What drove your interest in becoming a dietitian?
I knew I wanted to be in healthcare, but I also knew I didn't want to be a nurse. Right. No shade to nurses, but I'm not really good with needles and blood. So,
something that's a little less,
Yep. So, and I learned about the program here at the U of S, and I started at Red Deer College and transferred over. So, it's been, I'm a U of S alumni and very, very happy. And I loved Saskatoon. So charming. So it just sucked me in.
That's good. And now raising a family, you've got your business going here. Who are some of your clients? Like different walks of life, but you help parents, you help people with health issues, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Who you got in your client base?
Absolutely. So, and there are a number of practitioners that work with me. So one social worker and six other dietitians. So we all have an area of focus, but yes, everywhere from chronic conditions like autoimmune conditions, gastrointestinal conditions like celiac disease, irritable bowel syndrome, inflammatory bowel disease, as well as heart conditions, prediabetes, including, and then into other things like polycystic ovary syndrome, fertility. And I would say we have a pediatric dietitian, so she does a lot with infant and child growth and development. And then finally, eating disorders and disordered eating. Mm.
What does being a dietitian mean? Like, what do you learn when you get that designation?
Yeah, well, I'll just say it's not the food guide for 5 years.
Right.
So it is a lengthy program. It's a 5-year degree, Bachelor of Science in Nutrition. So it is a very medical and very science-based background.
Right.
So we do learn a lot about biochemistry, physiology, anatomy, and obviously disease states, as well as nutrition science. So once we finish the school portion, then it's a 10 to 12 month internship. And it's an accredited internship Canada-wide. And once we have that under our belts, then we can graduate as a registered dietitian. So the name is protected, similar to registered nurse or medical doctor. But we can also call ourselves nutritionists.
We're chatting today with Brooke Bullock, who is a registered dietitian, owner of Food to Fit Nutrition. I find it interesting. You say you work with a team of people, number of dietitians. Did you say a social worker?
I do have a social worker on our team.
Why is that important? I'm curious.
That's a great question. Well, we she has her own client base as well, but we do find that because there is a huge piece to trauma and a person's history and lived experience as well, and that can tie into their food relationship very much, whether or not they're experiencing an eating disorder or experiencing disordered eating or maladaptive behaviors around food, we do find a lot of people can struggle with their mental health, and that can change how or what they eat, and it can change their relationship to food. So that is an important piece, I think, sometimes just to even plant that seed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of our clients already have a therapist or counselor, so.
Yeah, it speaks, though, to me, to the level of commitment that your team has to truly getting people on a path to wellness. Because eating isn't just about the physical act of eating, and you and I have talked about that on the show. There's lots of connection between nutrition and social status, or people that are having maybe some social challenges in their life, whether it's food insecurity, unemployment, those types of things often lend themselves, you know this better than I, to nutrition choices that they make.
Yeah, I mean, we do know that, you know, the social determinants of health play a big, big role in a person's overall well-being. We don't want to put all our eggs in the nutrition basket, but food is more than just fuel. I mean, it really, we do have a connection to it. It is nurturing. It's comforting at times. It certainly does fuel us in ways. It can play a role in our overall health and well-being. But again, it's a small piece of the pie. So we also know that a person's health and well-being is influenced by education and income, access to healthcare, access to food, as well as experiences with discrimination and racism. Mm-hmm. So,
Brooke Bullock is my guest, registered dietitian. The questions are already coming in, and so far the questions are mostly around specific diets. So
sure, we can touch on a few.
Yeah, we will get to those as well. But are there ever questions that you find daunting, or you say maybe I'm not the best person to answer that question?
Yeah, that's a great point. I've been doing this for 16 years. It's a passion of mine. I know a lot about nutrition, but generally speaking, there's so much that we just don't know about nutrition. So I don't know everything, and I'm definitely not the expert on anyone's body. So, you know, I always have a disclaimer. This is for informational purposes. It's not to replace your advice from your primary provider. But also, sometimes the overlap between nutrition questions in agriculture can come up. Now, I do go on a lot of farm tours to help learn, but I'm not an agriculture expert. So I will try to answer certain questions from my experience and perspective, mm-hmm. but I'll certainly let people know if it's not something I can answer.
I don't know what grade it was, but there was a grade where we learned about Canada's food guide, right? And I remember,
sure.
I want to say grade 2 or 3, but it was about a balanced diet. And the reason I say this, and I'm actually laughing as I think of it, because I remember going home to my mom, and my mom was a working mom. She was a school teacher herself. And I said, Mrs. So-and-so, I won't give her name, who was our teacher at the time, says bacon isn't good for you, because we were having bacon and eggs, I think, for supper,
sure.
Whatever it was.
Yeah.
Mom said, well, Mrs. So-and-so doesn't have to get you to hockey practice in half an hour and come up with a quick meal. So it's, learning the food guide is one thing, but being able to apply it in a busy, hectic lifestyle with activities and kids and commitments and all the rest of it, that's where it can be really challenging, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I mean, and it's really important. I mean, it's just there is no one single food on its own that is going to harm a person. It's just not that simple. And there's so much nuance and context that comes with, again, a person's well-being and their health and what quote unquote nutrition is. All food has nutrition. And sure, you know, some have more nutritional value. We're not saying they're equal, mm-hmm. and others have less nutritional value. But this idea of good and bad just adds moralization. And I think a lot of confusion for people. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, bacon has a lot of important nutrients,
right.
Iron, zinc,
right.
Protein.
Yeah.
And sure, it might be higher on the sodium end, but is it still nutrient dense? Yes,
sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If that was a change and people were eating it every day, might they see a rise in blood pressure? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So it's all in context.
For sure. Okay. Yeah. We're going to take our first break. Brooke Bullock is my guest for a full hour, registered dietitian, owner of Food to Fit Nutrition. You can check it out online at foodtofit.ca. Phone line, text lines are open for you. If you have a question for Brooke, I've got a lot of things we're going to talk about. What a balanced plate looks like. Are there any good diets out there? Or Brooke likes to talk about, she takes a non-diet approach to helping set people on their journey to being healthy with regard to eating. So more with our guest, Brooke Bullock, when we come back here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Welcome back to the conversation on nutrition today. We've got a registered dietitian joining me in studio, Brooke Bullock, who has been on our program before. She's the owner of Food to Fit Nutrition and joins me. What does a balanced plate look like? It's, you know, the no such thing, I guess, as a perfect meal. But if we're sitting down to a supper, what should we see on that plate?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of ways to look at this. I would say the simpler way would be to kind of look at the plate as, do I have sort of three different food groups? And the ones that I like to focus on are proteins, your protein foods. So that's often, you know, dairy or meat-based foods, fish or plant-based proteins. So pulses, tofu, soybeans, that kind of thing. Proteins, some sort of fruit or vegetable, and then often a grain or starch. Now, this one's, I think, a little bit more variable, but I do like to see it on those plates at least a couple of times a day. And this is because this is where a lot of our energy actually comes from.
Right.
And blood sugar stability. Mm-hmm. So the other way, maybe a little bit more specific, more advanced way to look at it is, do I have a source of fiber, fat, protein? So the FFP, fiber comes from, again, fruits or vegetables, sometimes those whole grains. Fat, I often say don't overthink fat because it's often going to be in there, whether it's a condiment, a salad dressing, in your meat or in your cheese, like nuts. We often get fat, but the protein. So I find most people are really lacking in fiber and protein. And if this is a great place to start, take that additive approach as opposed to I got to cut this, I got to cut this, I got to cut this. What do you need to add to your plate? Do you have protein? Do you have fiber in the form of a whole grain or a fruit or vegetable?
It's also about portion size, right? And understanding the, you know, I'm thinking about, you could have a plate with all of those perfect things that you're talking about represented on the plate, but it's heaping full and it's hard to even hold in your hand when you're coming back from the buffet line. So there is something to be said about that, I'm guessing.
Here's the thing about portions. I find when people are actually describing to me that they have an issue with portion control, what I find is it's often at the dinner table at the end of the day, and it's often because they're not eating enough in the day. The other thing about portions is, there's a bit of a red flag, because if you are tracking portions really rigidly, but we look at that hunger and fullness scale. So zero is ravenous, empty, like I could eat everything I see.
Right.
10 is uncomfortably full. If we aim to be satisfied, sort of around that 7 on that scale, if you finish a meal and you're neutral, and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm not really satisfied, I might even still be hungry. Guess what? You're just going to be searching for food, you know, in the pantry all evening long. So for people who can tune into that fullness, that's where we kind of try to get them to. But it's true, not everybody is able to tune into their hunger fullness cues. So sometimes there's a lot to kind of work on there. And sometimes what we do is focus more on a mechanical style eating where it's like time-based and just get people eating a little bit more throughout the day.
So let's talk about that, Brooke, because it is something. I'll use me as an example. I'm a person, I get into work at about 5 in the morning. I will have had something to eat for breakfast right at 5, and then I won't eat again until well, 1 o'clock, I'm off the air and I have lunch. Sure. And I'm usually starving.
Famished.
So you're telling me I should have some carrots in the control room here or something, right, to be nibbling on, because that's part of it is you need to eat regularly through the day.
Yeah. So when one of those, like, meal pattern is something we talk a lot about with clients, especially early on in our sessions. So when you're talking about 5 a.m. to 1 p.m., that's a 7-hour gap. Mm-hmm. That's massive. Your blood sugars are going to drop. You might notice a change in mood, maybe brain fog. Mm-hmm. And some people do this because they just find they get so much dopamine and energy from their jobs. It's very easy to distract from hunger and what your body needs. But I would say it's really important every 3 or 4 hours to fuel. Mm-hmm. So again, that's using that clock. So I would say by 9 or 10, it's time to have a snack. Something with protein, something with carbohydrates, maybe fruit and yogurt or cheese and crackers. Like veggies isn't going to be enough. It's not going to cut it. Maybe veggies, hummus and crackers, like something like that.
Sure.
A granola bar and a boiled egg, like matching those carbs and protein. Then you're just going to feel real fueled and settled. Also, when you go through those big gaps in the day, we call this backloading our calories. So when people don't eat enough in the day, and I think a lot of people, if they really reflect, will notice this, it's bigger suppers and then sort of like a grazing from supper to bedtime.
Were you watching me watch the Oilers game last night as I was having some popcorn? And yeah, I mean, that's the thing though, right? Like eating, I know that eating later in the evening, for example, is not always a great practice, but Stanley Cup playoff time, it seems to be tough.
Sure. Yeah. I know it's tough for me too. I can't eat too much in the evening. I have reflux. I have this chronic reflux. Sure. And for me to eat something really greasy or heavy or too much and lay down, mm-hmm. that's a bad idea. So I try to keep it lighter and a smaller snack. It's not that we can't eat in the evening, but for some people, and it just doesn't really work to not eat in the day and then backload the calories.
So on that notion, one of the questions that came through on the text line from Kelly in Lumsden is the OMAD diet good? This is one meal a day, right? That's, I think, what this...
I think that is, yes.
Yeah. So, you know, we've got about a minute and a half till we take our next break. But
sure.
Just can you give us a sense of this notion of fasting or one meal a day? Do you have thoughts on that?
I do, and I would say probably for the vast majority of people, it's not going to be a great idea. It doesn't give them enough fuel where they need it. It's impossible to meet your daily nutrient needs. I think they might notice, again, just searching for food and satisfaction. It would be, but again, everyone's unique, but I would say just based on experience, it's not going to work for a vast majority of people.
Right. You actually don't like the word, maybe I shouldn't phrase it that way, but you don't use the word diet in your practice very much, do you? I mean, in terms of like a diet, going on a diet.
Well, we certainly don't put people on diets,
right.
But we certainly understand why people go on diets mm-hmm. and we help people unpack that.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to take our next break. Brooke is with us right until 12 o'clock today. It's fascinating. It's stuff that applies to all of us, whether we follow the rules or not. I'm a good example of that. So this is a good session for me. But phone lines are open. I know we've got a few texts coming in. 1-877-332-8255. If you've got a question for Brooke when it comes to nutrition or diet, this is the time to ask. Here until 12, you're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Welcome back to the conversation with Brooke Bullock today. Joining me for a full hour, registered dietitian, owner of Food to Fit Nutrition. And if you want to check out the website, lots of great stuff there, foodtofit.ca. Brooke, I noticed on your website, I won't read all of it, but you talk about inviting curiosity as you navigate the complexity of your clients' lives, how it affects meal planning, eating habits and patterns. You really talk about this being looking at markers of health, looking at it from symptom improvement, food and body relationship, client confidence. So this reaches further than just what we're eating, what that tells me.
Definitely. It's not just the what. There is a lot of, I think, nutrition-related counseling and care. So it's sort of like taking – a lot of people have a very self-critical, judging mm-hmm. food police that lives in their mind. And so the self-compassion piece. So for example, I hear this a lot. I'm just lazy. And I say, like, let's peel back that layer. How about I'm exhausted? I'm overwhelmed. I'm feeling depressed or low. I'm unsupported by people in my household. Or, ugh, why did you eat that? You've ruined your diet. You may as well throw in the towel. The self-compassion piece is like, I wonder why I have such a strong craving for these foods. Why do I feel so out of control around these foods? What might be going on? So it's really that taking that self-criticism to curiosity. Right. Like, you're like an N1 experiment, one person experiment. Mm-hmm. Let's explore that as opposed to just jumping to conclusions.
Right. Is emotional eating a thing?
Yeah, I think it is.
I've heard that expression. People say, I'm an emotional eater.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, food and eating is emotional. I think to separate a human from like, and I think diet culture has made this like emotional eating out to be this thing that's terrible that you have to control. It's like, well, we eat emotionally for a lot of reasons. I mean, you know, when in social gatherings, connection, like when you think of a food, like I often think back to my mom baking cinnamon buns or homemade bread, and you come in and you put some butter on it or margarine and it's melting, and it's like, that is an emotional response because in me, I'm like, oh, you can smell it in your mind, and that, and it was nurturing. And so food is all of those things, but it can become maladaptive if we are using food as one of our only coping tools.
Right.
So we need a lot of coping tools in our life. Food can't be the only one. But for some people, they are using food as their only coping tools. Sometimes that's something to explore.
I noticed a text from Janet saying, do you work with clients who have trouble or ask questions about how can I get my child to eat better? I'm packing lunches for them for school, but often some of the stuff that I send comes home in the lunch kit. Is that something you encounter with your clients?
All the time,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Even when the client is there for themselves because they're often busy parents. So yes, a couple of things to note is that lunch hour, if you can imagine, like actually in some of the kids, they have TV at the lunch hour and some of them are just with their friends. Sometimes they eat outside. There is a lot of distraction. So your kid is not the only one who sometimes eats all of their lunch and sometimes eats none of their lunch.
Right.
So one of the things we invite parents to think about is never shame your kid for not eating their lunch. You might just say, hey, did you have enough to eat? And what I like to do is when my kiddo gets home, I open up the lunch and whatever is still left, I'll just, like, he might be into his tablet or building Lego at the island or something. I'll put some of the lunch pieces out on the island and very non-judgmentally, and he may or may not take it. Mm-hmm. But we can't force or get our kids to eat healthy. We can offer a variety of foods. I like to use a checklist when I'm building lunches. It's, is there two proteins? Is there two grains? I aim for a fruit and a vegetable and then a dessert. So you bet. There's bear paws or Teddy Grahams.
You can throw a bear paw.
That's the dessert. But yeah, two grains, two proteins, a fruit, a vegetable, a bear paw or whatever, a dessert. And that, I love the checklist. I just throw it in. If he eats it, if he eats it. If he doesn't, he doesn't. It's one meal a day, right? Mm-hmm. There's nothing we can do.
Very, very cool. Brooke Bullock is my guest, registered dietitian. There's so many questions coming in. I want to get to some of these. Lola from Humboldt, after my heart here, she says, I have a sweet tooth. How do I stop or at least change so that I'm not always craving sweets? Mm-hmm. I love sweets.
So again, that curiosity piece, my first question is, number one, are they trying to cut out or restrict carbohydrates? So sometimes when there is active restriction of carbs, I can't, I shouldn't, it's bad, that can just ramp up cravings because it's that sort of line in the sand. And as humans, we always want to cross it, right? Number two, is there enough energy and just overall nutrition in the daytime, particularly not just from carbohydrates, so maybe a little bit of carbs, but like from fiber and protein. Are your meals earlier in the day and your snacks satisfying and satiating? Number three, do you like what you're eating? Some people are forcing themselves to eat things and their lip is curling. Absolutely, that's a trigger for searching for food, the foods you're craving, and increased cravings. And finally, I would say sometimes I explore a possibility of insulin resistance. So what is that A1C doing? What are those blood sugars doing? What are some of those signs? And then again, that's where we might send you back to your doctor to have a discussion or get some blood work. Mm-hmm. Looking at that pattern, balancing those carbs with protein. But the focus is getting more earlier in the day. And you can see a theme here, more protein, more fiber.
Sure. You talked earlier about a lot of your work is working with clients who have chronic conditions. They're trying to deal with cholesterol. It could be a blood pressure thing. Mm-hmm. I did notice a text here. My A1C is 6.2 and triglycerides are high. Mm-hmm. What should I do to lower it? And this texter goes on to say, already doing, you know, walking, running, skiing every day. So leading an active lifestyle. But from a diet standpoint, is that something you might see?
Oh, yes. I really have an interest in biochemical data. So this is your blood work. A1C is a three month blood sugar average, and it's a really great marker. So blood sugars are coming up a little bit, and it does coincide with rising triglycerides. When we have more sugar in the blood, those triglycerides can raise. And I would say it could be nutrition related. What we would be looking to is adding more fiber, more omega-3s, preferably from a supplement. We want something a little bit more potent. And again, you need to talk to your doctor or pharmacist if you are on any blood thinners. But looking at adding things like berries, more fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds, eating more regularly, looking at maybe swapping out a white bread for a 60% or 100% whole grain bread. So is there ways that we can add more fiber? And the other thing to note is that sometimes it really is just part of aging. So this is where we work with clients. We get like 3 months to kind of make some changes, see if we can budge those numbers. And often we do, but it's more about what you need to add than about what you need to say, cut.
Sure.
Yeah. But
there was a question on here, Brooke, from, I believe it was Anita. I'm just looking. Yeah. Anita saying, how do our nutrition needs change as we age? Is that something that you see what is good for you when you were 20 might have to look a little different when you're 60?
Absolutely. Nutrition through the life cycle, it does change. As we age, it's interesting because appetites really go down, but often it coincides with a reduction in protein foods. So our ability to synthesize muscle protein and to maintain muscle gets much, much harder as we age. And this is one of the best things we can do as we age is try to maintain muscle, do a variety of activities, including resistance training, but you gotta eat a little bit more protein because we are just not that efficient at it. So because our appetites go down, this is where that one meal a day is not going to cut it. If you're 60, 70 and you just don't have the appetite you did when you were 20, we need to be eating a little bit more frequently in the day so that we can get those proteins in without stuffing ourselves and feeling really uncomfortable.
Brooke Bullock is my guest. We're going to take our last break, and when we come back, we'll finish up. Again, the website is foodtofit.ca. So foodtofit.ca. I'd like to know where that title came from. Maybe I'll ask you that when we come back. Is there a common nutrition myth that you wish people would stop believing? I'll give you the break to ponder that. We'll be back to finish up our chat with Brooke Bullock here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Welcome back to our conversation with Brooke Bullock today, a registered dietitian who has joined our program before. She's the owner of Food to Fit Nutrition, works with an entire team of people that can really help you in terms of diet and nutrition. And that's what we've been doing for the last 45 minutes. We've had some great texts and calls that come in. I asked the question just before the break, are there common nutrition myths that you wish people would stop believing? Is that a thing, Brooke? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think the one on the forefront that's come up a lot is if I see it with, social media influencers, if you can't pronounce it in an ingredient list, you shouldn't eat it. So this actually pertains to chemophobia, so fear of chemicals. Mm. But I mean, if you read something and it says like, ascorbic acid. That is just the chemical name for vitamin C. And there's lots of examples, but like we are literally living and breathing chemicals. We are chemistry. We eat chemistry. Like, and this is just a misunderstanding of chemistry and science. And, everything, even banana, it contains, it's made up of chemicals and chemistry. So it's really such a silly point. And I think the goal is to try to get people to convince people to eat less ultra processed foods. Sure. And sure, I am all for like, let's add a little bit more variety and nutrient dense foods to the diet. Again, that additive approach, but nothing is going to ultimately harm you or hurt you unless you are anaphylactic or have celiac disease.
Chatting today with Brooke Bullock. I know we have talked about your non-diet approach, but there's still questions coming in, like, is a carnivore diet healthy? Do you have thoughts on, because people try different diets, right?
Yeah. So I'm not one to really, I think health is a very actually subjective. Sure. And I think everyone defines health for themselves. But, and again, we've talked about how it's really difficult to say that one single food is healthy or not healthy. I mean, it's all in context. In the context of carnivore diet, so we're not eating a whole lot of fiber from plants. It's predominantly meat. From my understanding. So one of the things actually that does come up for me is gut health. I'm a GI dietitian. I work a lot with folks who struggle with irritable bowel syndrome. So I love learning about the gut. And one of the things we do see is that when high fiber carbohydrates are cut out and the diet is made up of predominantly fat and protein, the gut microbes change. So we reduce the amount because we're no longer feeding our healthy gut microbes like lactobacillus and bifidobacterium. But we see a change in and the buildup of more pathogenic bacteria. So things that are going to not have the benefits. When we eat more high fiber carbohydrates from fruits, vegetables, but whole grains as well, we feed those healthy gut bacteria and they produce byproducts that support inflammation, immune system. There's benefits to reducing chronic conditions like heart disease. So we're just on the tip of the iceberg of learning about this, but I am not pro cutting out entire food groups, including high fiber carbohydrates. Right. Fiber is not sexy. Everybody loves to talk about protein,
yes,
but I am a huge fiber promoter.
Sure. So let's talk about that, Brooke. Is there something that you see and you deal with clients of all different walks of life with different, in some cases, chronic conditions. In other cases, it's just a busy lifestyle and they want to try and find a way to eat more nutritiously. Is there common nutrient deficiencies you see that people have?
Definitely. Iron is the number one nutrient deficiency worldwide. And I do see a lot of low iron and iron deficiency, and it really affects a person's quality of life, their ability to think, their ability to, one of the signs is I just feel like I don't get enough oxygen. I feel like my cardiovascular fitness has declined. Mm-hmm. And that's because hemoglobin carries oxygen. You need iron for healthy hemoglobin levels. So, yes, I see a ton of iron deficiency and sometimes it's so unexplained. But seeing a lot of that and vitamin D, anybody who lives north of Denver, Colorado. So if there is one blanket statement, everybody in Canada needs vitamin D all year round. Talk to your doctor, pharmacist, dietitian about how much you should be taking.
And do you advocate for like getting that in your diet through food or supplements a possibility?
That's a great question. Vitamin D definitely needs to be supplemented. There are very few food sources. So unless you're eating about 3 to 5 ounces of salmon every single day or a can of sardines every single day, you're not getting enough
Adam,
vitamin D.
I don't know about you, but that's not me. Adam smiling behind the glass there. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say, yes, all Canadians need a supplement. Sure. That would be my blanket statement. But again, you need to talk to your healthcare provider about just confirming that and how much you should take.
We've only got a couple of minutes left, but I know right now, one thing we talk about is just the cost of food. Food is expensive and eating healthy isn't inexpensive. And so this is the time of year where if you have access to a garden or community garden, it can go a long way to kind of setting you up for healthy eating through the summer and into the fall and through the winter.
Yeah, I mean, gardening's no joke. And kudos to all the farmers out there and all the food producers. It is difficult, mm-hmm. but it can be a great way to get kids connected to food, to connect your own body to food. It's certainly a privilege to be able to, you know, afford gardening. But that is a great way to sort of build some curiosity in foods. You know, growing your own carrots or lettuce and then using that. There can be such a great connection. There's also, interestingly, people who dig in the dirt with their bare hands, tend to have more diverse gut microbiomes. So really? That's another thing. Get in the dirt. Yeah, get your kids in the dirt. Yeah.
This has been outstanding. I appreciate you giving us a full hour. That's a big commitment, but the fact that
fun.
You were able to, yeah, we had a lot of questions come in. Foodtofit.ca, a good place where they can get a hold of you. Is their ability to connect maybe with further follow-up questions?
Yes, yeah. they can go to the contact page. They can book online. They can also go to our team page and email a dietitian directly. Mm-hmm.
There's been so many things that you've said this morning that have kind of caught me off guard that I wouldn't expect to hear from a dietitian. So I think in many ways we shouldn't just expect that we know the rules. It's talking with a professional like yourself that can make it very helpful.
Yeah. Very few rules, and it's just so unique to each individual. But
for sure.
This was great. I look forward to next time.
It's been a great chat. Brooke Bullock, thank you so much for coming in. And again, registered dietitian, owner of Food to Fit Nutrition. You can find them online, foodtofit.ca. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.